Hi there, it's Melvin. Just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Thrizer for supporting this month's podcast sessions. Thrizer is a payment platform that you have to check out if you are a private pay therapist and accepting out-of-network benefits. It basically helps clients save on therapy upfront. Thrizer can help verify a client's out-of-network benefit ahead of the first session so that they get transparency up front on what their out-of-pocket costs will be. I'll tell you more about Thrizer here in the middle of our session, but if you go to sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, you actually and then enter the code STC upon sign up, you get your first $2,500 in fees waived. Again, that's over at sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, and be sure to enter the promo code STC. So we'll jump right into today's podcast session. Hey, what's up? Welcome to session 68 of Selling the Couch. Hope you are having a great day, and if you celebrated Easter, hope you had a wonderful Easter with your family and with your loved ones. We had a really great time. This was actually our first time hosting Easter at our house, and we had lots of family over. We have a pretty big family, over 40 people, and it was a lot of fun, and it was a lot of cleaning up, but it was so worth it because we got to spend time with our family and just seeing all of our extended family, all the kiddos, having a great time with Easter egg hunting and doing all that was just made it so worth it. Today's podcast is a topic that I have been thinking for a long time about doing a podcast on, which is incorporating supervision into your journey as a private practitioner. You know, one of the things that I somewhat anticipated, but not really when I was a grad student, was how just blessed we are in to be in the profession that we are. Being in this profession affords us so many opportunities to really build what I think of as a dream career. So you can do supervision, you can be a traditional clinician and see clients, you can do testing, you can do consulting, you can do teaching. There are so many things. And supervision is something I've always just been really interested in. And my guest today is Renee Beck. Renee is a marriage and family therapist. She's based out in Oakland, California, and she has a ton of experience. And today we're just going to dive really deep. The really cool thing to know about Renee is that she actually is a dream work and transpersonal therapy focused therapist, and she works with alternative healers and with artists. And that's also the way that she works in supervision. So she really caters to individuals who are interested in learning from that perspective. So like I said, today we're going to dive really deep in. We're going to cover a range of things, including what made Renee decide to pursue supervision, some of the additional training or credentialing that was helpful for her and that would be helpful for you to have if you're thinking about having students and supervising students or interns or whatever that looks like. And then we go into a little bit more of the marketing side of things. So how does she advertise her services? How does she actually structure the supervision? And then how does she go about figuring out fees and what to charge in supervision? So here is my conversation with Renee Beck from reneebeckmft.com. Renee, welcome to Selling the Couch.
Thank you, Melvin. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, I'm really honored that you accepted. And I feel like this topic of integrating supervision into private practice is one that I know a lot of practitioners are trying to navigate. And when I first thought of this topic, I thought of you because I feel like you do this really well.
Thank you. I love supervising. It's just such an honor to help new therapists find their seat and develop their skills.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, like you told me right before we started, you said 50% of your practice is now, you know, related to supervision. That's amazing.
Yeah, and I kind of fell into it. I'd been at an agency, this wonderful little high school that started out as part of the free school movement back in 69. Mm. And I interned there and I became clinical director and developed a counseling program. And so I've been supervising and training interns for 30 years. And when I left there, I finally graduated high school, so to speak. it just became part of my private practice. I had contacts with schools because we took, you know, we had 5 or 6 interns or trainees every year. And it was like, oh, this is part of my practice. I'm doing supervision as well as, you know, transpersonal therapy and dream work.
Yeah. So it just made natural sense because this was an experience that you had, and just it made natural sense to have that same same system or same experience when you transition to private practice.
Yes.
So I, you know, this is not at all meaning to put you on the hot seat. So I'm just like extracting a couple of like nice, like golden nuggets. One is that one way to think about, you know, potential supervisees is to look at local universities in the area that offer, you know, graduate degrees in the mental health, any sort of mental health degree.
Yes. Yeah, there's a couple of ways to do that. A lot of them have clinics and you can actually get a position there supervising. I do offsite soup for one of the local grad schools. It's a wonderful school. The pay isn't great in terms of being in private practice, but I really love working with their students and it's steady, which is really nice. You know, your supervisees are going to be there every week.
Yeah. I mean, I think there is wisdom to finding and aligning with like a system that's already in place, right?
Yeah. So that's one way. I also do advertise and that gets me folks. I get folks who have placements where they don't have supervision. They have to get offsite supervision. Or I also have a couple of people who have supervision, but they only have one unit of it at their site. And they have more clients than that. So they need additional supervision.
Hours. How do you actually go about advertising to find these individuals that might need those hours?
It's on my website. I have a couple of pages on supervision. And I advertise groups every once in a while, which I have. Well, I don't work evenings because I'm in private practice and I don't have to.
One of the many advantages.
Set your own hours. Yeah. And I've never been able to get a group going, but I often will get an individual out of that. And I post stuff about my niche and people find me. I also work with a couple of clinics in the area that are set up as, you know, they're nonprofit, help people develop private practice model. And some of those people can choose their own supervisor. And so I get references from them as well.
Nice. How did you find those clinics?
Actually, mostly people found me. If you do a search for just, you know, local nonprofit clinics and you find out about them, you can contact them and see if they need supervisors.
Yeah, I love, I think like you're saying something which is really important is that you have multiple layers in peace where by which to get potential supervisees.
Yes. Yeah.
And what it sounds like it wasn't exactly like built overnight either, right?
No. Keep adding places. And there's also private practice internships where you hire people in your practice. I had one private practice intern, and it was wonderful because you really get to work much more closely with those people than you do with the offsite soup, because the offsite supervisees just come in once a week. And having someone in private practice is marvelous because you're also really mentoring them.
Yeah.
But it's a whole different ball of wax. You hire them, you are the employer, and you have to follow all the state and federal labor laws. And so if you have someone who comes in with, I don't know, say 4 to 6 clients already that they've gotten from their placement, that's pretty good. Otherwise, you're going to be putting out a fair amount of money while you're helping them develop their practice to get clients.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I guess it's almost like a 2 levels. So you could have a supervisee who's already in some kind of placement, getting their hours, mm-hmm. and you're seeing them for one-on-one supervision to meet that you know, that criteria for their license. But you could also hire folks in your private practice, which I feel like that second area, that's probably a whole other area topic for. But yeah, no, it's definitely, I mean, it's good that you brought that up, because I think I think it does pose a different set of challenges and things to at least consider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that you said earlier was, so you advertise on your website. Do you do like any other like kind of like more traditional things, like, I don't know, flyers, or even something more, you know, techie like Facebook ads or Google AdWords, or how does it work?
I do a lot of social media. Mm-hmm. I haven't paid for advertising mm-hmm. other than my website, mm-hmm. but I do a lot on Facebook, on Google Plus, Twitter, and let's see, and I'm also on Psychology Today, so I put ads in the community forums there. Mm-hmm. And I also do emailings to the people I know once or twice a year. Mm. Just let them know what I'm doing.
Nice. I know this might be a little challenge to like measure, but have you been able to track like the rate of return on these different like social media platforms? Or
I haven't.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to track that.
Yeah, because you never really know which, even if they say, oh, I saw you on here, but they may have gotten there from someplace else. Mm. And I mean, the other thing is word of mouth.
Right.
I get probably half of my supervisees now. Mm. I've been doing this about 3 years, year and a half full time. And about half of them come from other supervisees.
Oh, that's really interesting. From supervisees and not necessarily like training directors or.
Right.
Yeah.
You people who have supervised with me and are now licensed. Yay.
Yeah. You did your job.
Yeah. I am a mentor with East Bay Kampft. Mm. And it's a great program. Pre-licensees or early licensees can get a mentor. Mm. And we volunteer. It's an hour a month. You meet with your mentee and help them with what they're working on in developing their business, you know, countertransference stuff that comes up with them. I find it's mostly the business end because, of course, as we all know, grad school does nothing to help us with that in terms of developing a private practice. And that's a very rich relationship. It's also a good way in getting your name out there in the community.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just thinking like for me, right, I know like Philly has the Philadelphia Society of Clinical Psychologists. So I guess what I'm hearing is think about maybe even local or state organizations pertaining mm-hmm. to your license and seeing if they have some sort of a mentor track. And that might be a nice way to connect with other colleagues, which are, you know, inevitably could be referral sources.
Yeah. East Bay Kampft, of course, has an E-tree mm-hmm. and so I'm active on that too. There's a Bay Area therapists who work with adolescents. Mm. And since I was working in a high school for a long time, I'm part of that. I do get supervisees who are working in schools or with teenagers specifically.
Mm. Again, I think there's like something to be said for this. You definitely build this over time. Like this wasn't something, you know, you started, I imagine it sounds like you started with like one referral source and really getting to know the people and then building and building and building.
Yes. Because it was like, oh God, I love supervising. I could do more of this.
Who else
offers
it? Let's
find out how. Yeah.
You know, just circling back a little bit, when you decided that you wanted to be a supervisor, was there any additional training like or credentialing that was like helpful for you to have? And again, I realize this may be, you know, profession dependent, but I'm just kind of curious to pick your brain on that.
MFTs only require a six hour class, and you have to do that every 2 years, every license renewal. Mm. For LCSWs, you need to do a 15 hour class, which I've also done because I usually have one or two ASWs that I'm supervising.
Yeah. Is that state or is that kind of a national?
I think that's national.
Okay.
I know it's for California.
Right.
And the requirements do vary from state to state, so that is worth checking out. I know that CAMFT has like an approved supervisor program. So does AMFT. I have not done that because they didn't have them when I started out. Those have only been around for, I don't know, probably 10 years. And I've done so much supervision and training that I just didn't want to go through that to get that certificate.
So then it sounds like just getting those hours for and just meeting those minimum hours was helpful just from a license standpoint. And I imagine as you've done more and more of this, have you gotten any other additional training, like in terms of continuing ed or additional trainings, anything like that?
I always do the 6 hour or more trainings for my CEUs. And those are fun. And there's lots of places offer them. Your local grad schools usually have CEU programs. There's a lot of things online. I really like Zohr Institute, but there's tons of online places that you can get CEUs and different kinds of supervision training.
Yeah. The Zohr Institute has, it sounds like, specific supervision related trainings.
Yes. Most of the CEU places do, because it's a requirement to have CEUs every renewal cycle if you're supervising, which is good.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to shift and focus on this area, which is like setting fees. I feel like this is a challenge as a clinician. I imagine this is probably a challenge as a supervisor, especially because, you know, like as a supervisor, it's usually folks that are still in training. So you want it to be affordable, but then you also want to make a living too, right? So...
Right.
How do you find that balance?
I think about supervision as my low fee slots. And every supervisor I know does this differently. Some people charge their full therapy fee. Some people charge much less than I do, which I can't afford to. I charge about 55% of my full therapy fee for offsite supervision.
Okay. You said 55%?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Because these people are, they're in an internship that's probably unpaid. They're having to work to pay their bills. And they may be at the point where they also have to pay back student loans. And I remember that really well. And I paid for my own supervision for the whole time. It's hard. It's really hard. So I know I charge a little more than some of the people in my area, but it's like the least that I can charge.
Yeah. Just offhand, how do you think that experience of going through the process and having to pay, you know, when you were still a student, how do you think that has informed you as a supervisor now in terms of just some of the business decisions that you make?
I don't know what my supervisor's full fees were, but I know they were not charging me that. So that definitely influenced me because I really, really appreciated their understanding of my position. Yeah, and it's not easy. You're paying all this money for grad school, and then you're not getting paid for your internship, or you're getting paid a token amount, usually. Then you have to pay for soup, too.
How often do you meet with your supervisees, I guess, with some of those parameters in place?
Once a week, which is usually required. If you want to cover your client hours during that week, you have to meet... You have to get supervision each week when you provide therapy.
I feel like I'm going to ask a lot of silly questions, but does the number of hours of supervision that you need, does that depend on like the number of your client load? Okay.
Yeah. For MFTs and for this is for California, the Board of Behavioral Sciences, for MFTs, marriage and family therapy, associate social workers, and people going for their LPCC. For interns, they need one unit of supervision, which is either 1 hour of individual or 2 hours of group soup for every 10 client contact hours.
Okay.
Trainees, those are people who are still in grad school, need one unit of supervision for every 5 hours.
I see. Okay, so that's helpful to know. And then when the supervisees come to you, generally, do they have an understanding of how many hours are required, or do you go ahead and, you know, meet with them and then based on whatever degree they're pursuing, you figure out how many hours they need, or how does that generally work?
They usually know And when they don't, we talk about it. It's one of the things we cover in the first session. Mm-hmm. I also go over safety issues, reporting, child protective services, suicidality, confidentiality, all that stuff I usually do in the first session because I just want to know that they know, or I usually ask them about those things and then fill in any blanks they might have.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way of approaching that. It makes it much like teaching oriented.
And you want to make sure that they know these things,
right?
Because they're kind of important.
So how, I guess, and this, I guess, could vary. So are you generally, I guess it would depend on the situation. Sometimes you're the primary supervisor. Sometimes you might be a secondary supervisor, right? Like if they're on site. How does it work? Let's just take it from the primary supervisor. If you're the primary supervisor and they're, you know, maybe at another location, right? And they're seeing somebody and there's some sort of like crisis situation, either the individual is psychotic or suicidal or homicidal, whatever it is, right? How does that generally like work? They call you.
Yes. And they also have pretty much every site, there's somebody on site that they can call as well. Mm-hmm. So if I'm not available, they get guidance from that. A lot of the nonprofit private practice building models, clinics, generally don't take people who have been hospitalized in the past 6 months who are actively suicidal.
There's that layer there already. And then once they make that call, let's say you're in a session, it sounds like you probably just return the call as soon as you can, or do you?
As soon as I can, yes. Okay.
And then once that, again, I know this probably varies, but once you touch base back with them, what does that generally look like?
It's checking in with them about, you know, what happened, what they did, what they think is going to happen now, seeing if they need other resources, other referrals for the client in the community, and also talking about their process, because I know reporting the first time can be really hard. If you need to have somebody 5150'd, it can be really hard, and it gets easier with time, but particularly that first time, it can be, I mean, it's brand new for one thing, and it's also, it can be scary.
Oh, absolutely. So process, I still remember the first time I was like sweating bullets and nervous and, you know, like knowing I had to do that, but still very scary. You're right.
Yeah. So processing that, and also how they think it's going to affect their relationship with the client and how they can use what they're feeling to help the client. And I mean, sometimes with CPS reports, the client may need you to be the person that they hate. Usually that's not the case, but it, you know, it does happen every once in a while. And then you can find them another therapist if you can't, you know, if it's not in their best interest where they are in their process at that time. Usually, in terms of reporting child abuse, the child often feels really relieved that someone really, really cares about them enough to say, no, this has got to stop. No, this was not okay. And it can actually strengthen the relationship.
And that's such a valuable lesson for a supervisee to learn, right? Like in that moment, it can feel yucky and hard and painful, but sometimes like the hardest decisions are the ones that benefit the individual or the family the most.
Yes.
Renee, the last question that I just had for you was this idea of niching. Like, I feel like multiple folks that have come on the podcast have talked about, you know, niche down. And I just was like curious, like, how does this idea of niching work when it comes to supervision? I don't know if that quite makes sense, but.
Well, my niche is dream work and transpersonal therapy for alternative healers, artists, and intuitives. And that includes therapists. And that is how I market. And when I market for supervision, I market for transpersonal supervision. And that gets me people who have that orientation. Even if they're working in, I have supervisees who work in a much more behavioral setting. Or who work with preschool kids with more serious issues, but it's an orientation. It's a how do we help this person access their inner strength and wisdom, as well as, you know, the external resources that they have. But I'm also really practical, I mean, I ran a clinical counseling program for 30 years. So I know all the nuts and bolts of the bureaucracies, all the paperwork. I also think part of supervising is helping interns navigate the policies, personalities, and politics at their site. Because especially if they're coming out of grad school where there may have been a lot of processing, that's not what you're going to be doing at your site most likely. And learning how to find your professional seat there. But I think niching is great because I'm focusing on the work that I really love to do that feeds my soul. I'm going to meet my clients and my supervisees wherever they are, but it's still how I'm approaching the work. And I get my ideal clients and my ideal supervisees by marketing to that. And you get other people too, but mostly I'm getting the folks that I can really help the best.
Yeah, it provides that framework before folks even walk in that first appointment.
Yeah.
Rini, thank you so much for doing this. I feel like we can probably talk another hour or so about supervision. But I appreciate you and I just appreciate being willing to just share your experiences. I know that this is an area that a lot of folks want to get into, and I know that this is going to really benefit a lot of folks.
Well, thank you. It's been fun. I really enjoy speaking with you, and I love talking about supervision.
What are some of the best ways that folks can get in touch with you?
My website is renibeckmft.com, and my office is in Oakland. I do therapy and supervision online in California, and I also do consults for licensed therapists. So,
I will definitely put all of that information in the show notes. Thank you again.
You're welcome. Thank you, Melvin.
Hey, what's up? Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Rini. You know, it's so funny. When I was talking to her, I was literally hanging on each word because I don't know what it was like for you, but when I was talking to her, you could feel that every word she said, it was not just something that was empty. It was really something that she had gone through and that she had firsthand experience with. And you could just feel that, you know, it was inspired by something a lot deeper. Rini mentioned a training again, which you can find at thezuerinstitute.com. And as I think about this conversation, I think one key thing that I'm taking away is how cool supervision really is, right? On one hand, you get to help a new generation of therapists make that transition from trainee or student into clinician. But the other side of that is, I think, you know, the last time I did supervision was I co-supervised 3 practicum students when I was doing my postdoc. And I remember that I was just a lot sharper clinician because I was teaching and learning from them as well. And that's kind of the cool thing. I think it keeps us and it helps us to stay sharp as clinicians when we actually get to supervise others. You can find show notes to today's episode and the resources that Rini mentioned at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 68. If you have questions about supervision or you are doing supervision really well and just have some tips to share with your colleagues, we would love to have you in the Selling the Couch Facebook community, which you can find at sellingthecouch.com/community. So I have like 2 big pieces of news to share. The first thing is, if you've ever been on the Selling the Couch blog, you probably noticed that it's very practical. It's not like amazing design or anything like that. More than anything, I just wanted to have a place where, you know, you can listen to episodes and all those things. But as STC continues to grow, we now have a formal homepage, and I'm really proud of what we did. I actually am working with a web designer who's a good friend, and he just did an amazing work with the homepage. So if you go to sellingthecouch.com, you can actually see what it looks like. And if you're curious about who I used, you can find my friend Cyril at cmatt.org. So it's cmatt.org. The other thing that I wanted to share was I've been working behind the scenes in creating a DIY private practice website guide. So if you are in the early stages of private practice journey, thinking about creating your website, want to do it in WordPress, then I put together just a really easy to understand step-by-step guide. It's got screenshots, it's got videos. I even included a section on naming your website and thinking a lot about the long-term vision of your career and some of the strategic things to think about, things that I've learned along the way. You can find that at sellingthecouch.com/website-guide. You can also find it on the main homepage of the blog as well as on the resource page. Again, show notes to today's episode are at sellingthecouch.com/session68. Have a great rest of your week. It is going to be phenomenal weather here in Philly, and I'm going to be spending a lot of time outdoors. Take good care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop.